Hi, this is Scott Kersner. I write the Innovation Economy column for the Boston Globe. I had a chance to chat recently with the inventor and entrepreneur Ray Kurzweil. One of his latest projects is called the KNBF Reader Mobile. It's basically software that runs on a cell phone, and it allows a blind or visually impaired user to take a picture of some printed material with his phone and have the phone translate that into speech. Kurzweil also thinks the software may be useful for sighted users as a kind of universal translator.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you first got interested in developing technology for the blind and visually impaired?
My field is pattern recognition, and in the early 70s I had a technique that could recognize printed letters in any type font. The state-of-the-art in character recognition back in 73 was it could recognize a single type font. It was called template matching, and basically the computer had an exact pixel-for-pixel representation of the letters, so it could recognize one type style if it was printed perfectly without proportional spacing. So it was a classical problem back then to recognize any type style and to deal with printing errors, and I developed a technique, and it was kind of a solution in search of a problem. And I happened to sit next to a blind guy on a plane who was explaining that blindness is really not a handicap. But then he corrected himself and said, well, there is one handicap, which is inability to read ordinary print, and Braille and recorded material don't keep pace with only 3% of the books ever put into Braille, and the situation is worse for inner office memos and other topical literature that he needs for his business. And that kind of inspired us to devote this technology to build a print-to-speech reading machine for the blind. We had to develop two other technologies. We developed the first flatbed scanner, because those didn't exist back then, and the first text-to-speech synthesizer, because speech synthesis from text didn't exist either. So we developed those and put these three new technologies, each of which is now a large industry in its own right, into a print-to-speech reading machine for the blind. And we introduced it on January 13, 1976, and I remember that date because Walter Cronkite used it for his signature sign-off, and that's the way it was, January 13th, 1976.
And my understanding is that year when it was first commercially sold, it was, what, about the size of a dishwasher?
It was the size of a washing machine. And
what was the price about?
It cost $50,000. Stevie Wonder bought the first one. That actually started a relationship with him. We're still friends, and later on it led me to found... With Stevie Wonder Kurzweil Music Systems, but that's another story.
Right, and so, I mean, at $50,000, it was what, the sort of thing that, you know, maybe a school for the blind would have?
Yeah,
or
it came down to $30,000 pretty quickly, but it was still for institutions, schools for the blind, schools in general, libraries, and agencies. So over the years, I've stayed closely involved with this field, and the machines have gotten smaller and better, like every other example of information technology. But in 2002, it was still a device that sat on your desk. So a blind person or a dyslexic person would have to bring printed material back to their desk. And there's a lot of printed material that you don't want to bring back to your desk, or you can't, like a sign on a wall or a bank ATM display. You could bring a menu back to your desk, but you'd rather read it in the restaurant. So being involved in this field, I would be giving a lot of speeches about the future of technology for blindness, and I would say someday a blind person will be able to take a device out of their pocket and read all the printed material as they go through the day. Then in 2002, Dr. Mark Maurer, president of the National Federation of the Blind, an organization that I had worked with on the original reading machine, we had a conversation. He said, well, Ray, you've been talking about this pocket-sized reading machine for the blind for many years. When do you think that'll be feasible? And I said, well, according to our, as you are probably aware, what another hat I wear is as futurist, and I'm an ardent student of technology trends, really stemming from my interest in being an inventor, because I realized 30 years ago that the key to being successful as an inventor was timing, and most inventions fail not because the inventor can't get the gadget to work, but because the timing is wrong. And the common wisdom that you can't predict the future is true for specific projects, but it's not true for predicting the sort of information properties of a technology, like the price performance of computing or the cost of genetic sequencing or the spatial resolution of brain scanning. These kinds of measurements of information follow exquisitely smooth and predictable exponential curves. In the case of computing, it was a smooth doubly exponential curve through the entire 20th century. So my response was, well, according to my models of cell phone technology, this will be feasible in 6 years, 2008, second quarter to be exact. And he said, okay, well, how long will it take to develop the software? I said, well, we have to do more than just put the optical character recognition and text-to-speech synthesis into the cell phone. We need a new layer of intelligent software that will correct the image for the vagaries of capturing a real-world image with a handheld device, particularly by a person who can't see what he's taking a picture of. We need to give feedback to the user to tell them where the print is, to move left, up, you know, right, left, move away from the image. We have to deal with three different degrees of freedom of tilt and rotation. The image will be curved, slanted. The illumination will be uneven because you don't have the controlled illumination of a scanner. There'll be strange background images that you don't see with just scanning a printed page.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned seven or eight vagaries of capturing print in the real world with a handheld device. He said, okay, I understand. How long will that take? And I said, well, about 6 years.
Uh-huh.
So he said, let's get started. So we, again, had a joint venture between Kurzweil Technologies and the National Federation of the Blind, which is the principal organization of blind people in this country. They have about 50,000 members.
And so my understanding is you kind of first had a real interim device that was kind of a marriage of a PDA and a Canon.
Yeah, we had an interim device a couple of years ago. But this year, a cell phone that could actually support this application became available, in fact, in the spring, just as we'd predicted 6 years earlier.
And the whole time you'd been working on the software for it?
Right, exactly. So there are some other companies now who are noticing, oh, a cell phone can support this application. They're starting to work on it. And even if they're a lot more efficient than we were, it's going to take them years to develop it.
Basically, as I saw it used, You can take a picture of, say, a menu or someone's business card, and the cell phone takes a few seconds to process that image and then reads it to you.
Yeah. So it's first of all cleaning up the image, de-skewing it, untilting it, evening out the illumination. So that was really the heart of the intelligent software we developed. It then does the character recognition, which is technology we had developed earlier in the 70s. And then does the speech synthesis, and of course there are user controls, and it will read it out loud. We now have working actually language translation, so it reads in seven different languages, and you can translate from any of those languages to any other language. You know, it's also, all of that technology will support reading from the web, which you can do on the device. It's also a pocket-sized GPS device for the blind, and email, and you know, every other function you can think of. But it is a reading machine. It weighs 4 ounces. It's 50,000 times smaller and lighter than our first reading machine.
And the cost is significantly lower, right? It's about $2,000 for the phone and all the software?
Yeah, the hardware and software is about $2,000.
Mm-hmm. And so you touched on something that I thought was really interesting, which is that, I mean, potentially this is an application that sighted people would want to use. If I'm, you know, for example, I'm going to Italy this weekend, you know, if I want to take a picture of a piece of paper in Italian or a restaurant menu in Italian and have it translated, that's the direction that this technology is going, yes?
Right. We call it snap and translate, or you could do snap and search. Just snap some print in a magazine or a store window and do a search on it from your cell phone. And we're talking to cell phone manufacturers about that, so that's something that we hope to move into in the future.
What's your time frame? I mean, obviously that feels like a much larger market than the, you know, as important as the KNFB reader mobile is, bigger market there.
The same thing happened with the original reading machine. I mean, we started with a blind reading machine back in the 70s, came out in 76. In 78, we came out with OCR for the commercial market for word processing and building databases. Lexis and Nexus were built using the Kurzweil data entry machine, which was the name of that product. Today, TextBridge from Nuance is still the number one OCR package. It's actually been in continuous development for, you know, over 30 years. Nuance, which is a multi-billion-dollar company, principally on character recognition and also speech recognition, which comes from Kurzweil Applied Intelligence. It used to be called Kurzweil Computer Products. That was the company that came out with the reading machine, and it's now a public company. That's actually pretty typical for disabilities technology. You may have heard of a technology called the telephone. I mean, that was originally developed by Alexander Graham Bell for the deaf. Obviously, deaf people can't hear it, but it was to capture audio with a microphone and then turn it into a tactile signal that deaf people could either feel or see.
But what's your prediction in terms of, you were very specific about when you thought the mobile reader would be out. What's your prediction about when people will be able to say, you know, I've got an iPhone, I want to use the camera, I've got a Nokia N82, and I want to use the camera to do language translation?
Well, a few years, 2 or 3 years.
And can you tell me a little...
We also have a prototype of speech-to-speech translation, where you can speak in one language and have it come out in another, and I demonstrate that in my lectures. Right now, that requires a bit more computation than a cell phone can support, but I mean, that's another trend, that cell phones are not only getting cheaper, but also, you know, much more powerful. They kind of lag by about 3 years in terms of being equivalent to a personal computer. So we can actually run this application now on a PC, and so it'll run on a cell phone within 3 years. That's another thing we're targeting.
Do you see a big part of that company's business plan as being kind of finding these other applications for it, whether it's people with reading disabilities or whether it's someone who can read perfectly well but, you know, is traveling and needs translation?
We are just now launching applications for reading disabilities, which has a completely different interface. That is a bigger market. There's about 7 million just kids in K through 12 who are dyslexic, who cannot read. That's not just mild reading impairment, that they really cannot read, but they're not blind. And for them, the device will display what it's reading on the screen of the cell phone with in large print and highlight each word as it's being spoken. And we have a lot of research showing that synchronized visual and auditory presentation helps build their reading skills while they're also using it. So it has both a remedial and compensatory function. And we're also going to pursue the general education market. There's another group who can't read, which is, you know, 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds. They're learning to read, but their intellectual level is far beyond their reading skill level. That's why parents read to their kids even when they're learning to read, because they can understand material that's much more advanced than they can actually read. And actually, that gap between reading ability and intellectual level, it lasts till about 5th or 6th grade. So all through K through 5, kids could be reading at their intellectual level rather than reading this primer material that's just trying to build their reading skills. There's 4 million kids each year who enter the school system, so that's a huge market. And this could be integrated into a, you know, automated reading education program. So that's another thing we want to pursue, and we'll be pursuing these commercial markets. So, yeah, and that was the pattern we followed before with the optical character recognition, which is now a multi-billion dollar business.
So my understanding is that 2009 is a big year for Ray Kurzweil on the silver screen, that there's a documentary coming out about you, and also your movie, The Singularity is Near. Can you
give
us the update?
And they'll be coming out around the same time, early next year. My movie, it's called The Singularity is Near, a true story about the future, and it's based on my book, The Singularity is Near. Is an intertwined documentary and narrative story. So it goes back and forth between documentary format and narrative about the future. And in the documentary, I interview 19 big thinkers about their ideas about the future and their ideas about my ideas. People like Alan Dershowitz talking about the legal rights of machines, or Marvin Minsky, the father of AI, or Richard Clark, who was head of counterterrorism under Bush and Clinton. And then the Beeline narrative story, it's the story of Ramona. It starts actually in a true past, showing me demonstrating Ramona, which I did at the 2001 TED conference. And then she in the future, she then becomes more and more realistic, more and more human-like, more and more independent. It's kind of a Pinocchio story. She hires Alan Dershowitz, who plays himself, to press for her legal rights as a person. The judge says, I'll grant you legal rights if you can pass a Turing test, where she has to be indistinguishable from a human. So she gets coaching from Tony Robbins, who's who teaches her, who plays himself, and he teaches her the secret of what it is to be human. And she passes the test, and worldwide protests break out. And there's also another narrative thread about her protecting the world from a gray goo attack. Pauly Perrette, who's the star of the TV show NCIS, I don't know if you've ever seen that show. She's the pigtailed, sort of gothy computer sleuth. She plays Ramona. So that's coming out early next year.
And then the documentary is filmmakers.
And then there's a documentary about my life, career, and ideas called Transcendent Man, made by a talented documentary film team. And they're coming out together, so it should be an interesting double feature.
Sure. Well, thanks for making the time to chat today. It was really helpful.
My pleasure.